We read here this evening of a most solemn occasion in the life of Abraham, a dear brother in the Lord who is with the Lord now. And Abraham was a man of God. He was a man who was mature in faith. He proved himself to be a man of great stability and wisdom, far from perfect, but a good man. And now, when the day that inevitably comes to every couple, there is a death, Abraham remains and Sarah departs. And this would undoubtedly have been a difficult time for Abraham. He would not have had the luxuries and comforts that we have today of arrangements being made on his behalf and all the support systems and everything else. He was very much on his own with his family and with his people. But remember, Abraham is more like a king here. He had hundreds of people round about him, and he had many, many servants and a great man of wealth. Nevertheless, he had lost his closest ally, his dear wife. Read verse 1 with me. And Sarah was 120 years old. 127 years of age. That indicates that her and Abraham could possibly, we don't know when they got married, but it is possible that they were married near 100 years, a century together. And what a journey that would have been for the two of them. Those were years of great experience, some difficulties. In those years, of course, they both commenced life in pagan Ur. And the Lord called the both of them way back at the beginning to leave their home. They were married and all before they left. And they left when they're about 60, but they're married long before that. They left their home, they left their country, and they walked with God, and they worshipped God wherever they went. Wherever they travelled, they worshipped God together. And no doubt for Abraham, going again to the altar would have brought back all the memories of the one he had lost. You know what it's like when you lose someone. There are things that cause your memory, as it were, to be shaken, and you suddenly remember vibrantly something about that individual. It may be an item of clothing. It may be something you would have done together, a scene that you would often have seen, and when you see it, when you touch it, when you hold that item of clothing again, it brings it all back to you. The person's gone. And I'm sure for Abraham, when he returned again to the altar, because he had an altar built in this area, when he returned again to the altar, it would have been tinged with sadness. Sarah's not here anymore. That human, earthly relationship ceased. That voice no longer heard, that hand no longer felt, that company no longer enjoyed. Not only did they worship the Lord together, they saw conflict together in their family. They saw the eruption with Lot and how Lot and them had to depart. You remember how they were involved in a war because Abraham went out after the five kings that fought Sodom and Gomorrah and they were successful. Abraham and Sarah, they were blessed by Melchizedek. They were blessed. They entered into a covenant with the Lord. Remember how their names were changed? The Lord didn't just change Abraham's name, but he changed Sarai's name to Sarah, indicating an importance upon Sarah, gave her a new name. The Lord loved her. Together, they saw Sodom destroyed. Together, they welcomed in a baby boy at the mature age of 90 for Sarah and 100 for Abraham. It was a real roller coaster for this couple. A very long, slow roller coaster. There are many highs, there are many lows, and the lows always happen in Egypt. And remember the Philistines as well. Highs and lows, but Sarah's roller coaster came to an end. You see, it doesn't matter how long you live, you always die. There is that portion in Genesis, a few chapters back, and we looked at it several months ago, where you have people's longevity of life is about 600, 700, some over 900 years long was their life. But still, the likes of Methuselah, they still died. Still died. As I was saying just to a man actually yesterday, an unsaved man, and I said to him, listen, it doesn't matter how long you live, there is one thing for certain, you will die. And we can make preparation for everything in life. We can make preparation for enjoyment like holidays or finances or relationships. Why do people not prepare for death? The one thing that is 100% certain. Well, Abraham is bereft of his dear wife. Look at verse 2. And Sarah died. That happened. You can't really dress this up. And the word of God doesn't dress up. She died. And I know at funeral times we need to be tender, obviously. We need to be gentle. And we want people to come to terms with it the nicest of ways. And often, and I don't have an issue with this, we often call our funeral services Thanksgiving services. And we're trying to dress things up, and we dress up the person who's died, and we bring flowers and fresh flowers, and we try to promote life and try to hide over the reality that death is just there. It's there. And the word of God now describing this doesn't dress anything up. Sarah died. Dead. It's all over. There's no second chances. And I'm sure you've experienced, we've all experienced death. And the one thing that's just eerily haunting about death is just the stillness. There's just a perfect stillness. With anything in life, you look at it and you expect it to do something. When you look at a person, you expect a flicker of the eyelids. You see the body. When it inhales and exhales, there's movement, there's life, there's freshness. With a corpse, it's just that eerie stillness. You don't hear the breath anymore. Just nothing. Nothing. And Abraham would have looked at Sarah. That's what he would have seen. And he would have looked at her as many a person has done. When you look at the corpse, it's the body of the person, but you just feel they're gone. I've often heard people married for years and their spouse goes, and when they look at the one who's lying there, it means so little to them. Because the spouse is gone. Just the body. The body hasn't changed. Gone. That's how Abraham would have felt here. And it's no wonder that we read in verse 2 that he mourned and wept. Verse 2, and Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, the same as Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. It is no wonder they came to weep for her. It's no wonder that he's mourning. See, this man's grief was genuine. This was genuine sorrow. This is the woman he has spent almost 100 years with. She was a faithful wife. If I can turn it around a little bit, just from Sarah's perspective. Obviously Sarah's dead, but we ought to live so that we're missed. An awful thing if Abraham was happy enough. Sarah died and Abraham was happy enough. What a sad thing that would be. And that has happened in the past. And, you know, there are funerals and people aren't particularly bothered. The person's dead. Relief. I remember reading one time, I have no reason to doubt this, it was one of the Wesleys. Gifted, godly men. But I'm not sure, I can't recall offhand which one it was. I should have researched before I came, but it's only came in my head there now. One of the Wesleys, when his wife died, he was away. He was away doing whatever it was he was doing, either preaching or singing. I think he was preaching. And when he heard, he was no big hurry back. In fact, it is said that when he stood at the graveside and she was being lowered unto the ground, you laugh at it, but it's so strange. He said, "This day hath the Lord blessed me." That's what he thought of his wife. She was obviously a real pain. "This day the Lord blessed me." And she was buried. It's an awful thing. It is. I mean, for the person to live in such a way, to live in such a way that someone would say that about you, "I'm glad to see them gone." That's not the way Sarah lived. Sarah wasn't perfect, nor was Abraham. But she was a good wife. She was also a good mother because in the next chapter, and we'll not get to it now, obviously, for a few weeks because of my absence here, but it's not until the end of the next chapter that Isaac wasn't settled after his mother's death until he was married. He was grieving for his mother until Rebekah came into his life. And just look with me as it comes to my mind, the following chapter, chapter 24 and the verse 67. I think this is where it is. Yeah. "And Isaac brought her into her mother Sarah's tent and took Rebekah." This is now Isaac, Abraham's son. He has received his wife Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her, and Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. He missed his mother. I'm not saying he was a wee mummy's boy. I'm saying he was a boy, a man rather, because from memory, I hesitate to say it, but I think he was about 40 when he married here. He was not a wee boy, he was a man, a mature man, but he missed his mother. He missed his mother. And he wasn't comforted until he received Rebekah to be his wife. So I say that to emphasize how good and godly Sarah was. I trust there's an example to stir us all up, that we would live in such a way that we would be missed whenever we die. Anyway, back to our portion here, Genesis 23 and the verse number 2. Abraham mourned and he wept. This is the first time we read of weeping in the Bible. The first time we read of someone crying. And it's at a graveside. Well, actually, it's not a graveside. It's the side of a corpse crying. Now, undoubtedly, listen, obviously, people cried before this. Obviously, there are people who wept over various reasons, over loved ones dying and so on. Remember how Adam and Eve, they were bereft of their son, and obviously they would have wept profusely the first occasion of death, and they knew they had brought death. Then undoubtedly, Adam and Eve wept incredibly, but it's just never mentioned. This is the first time that weeping is mentioned, and it is mentioned in the context of mourning. And we're told something here. The Lord has waited all this time to mention weeping only now when the death of a very significant lady is born. Has died. Because you see, sin brings death. And death brings tears. Men and women, death is not a natural thing to us. By this stage, I mean, countless individuals had died in the human history of mankind. Countless. But it's still unnatural. Here you have even a godly couple, an exceptionally godly couple, a remarkable couple, a couple who had walked together so closely for all of these years, and nothing else could separate this couple. Nothing else could separate them, but death has. There's weeping. Because death robs us. It robs us of relationships. It robs us of our friendships. Death is a stealer. Death isn't a giver. It's a 100% thief. And eventually it'll take your life too. It is the result of sin. Sin brings death. James tells us that in the New Testament very clearly. So we should flee death. Flee sin. It's unnatural for us. That's why we mourn. Because it's ripped our relationships apart. When God made Adam and Eve, he didn't make Adam and Eve to die. He made them to live. It was sin that caused death. Don't blame God for your death. Blame sin. Because sin brought your death. And so, Abraham, he mourns and he wept for his dear, dear wife. Now let me read some of these verses with you, because there's much to be said in this portion. This all happened in Hebron, and Hebron's a famous place in the Bible. It's not particularly relevant to what we're doing tonight, but in Hebron, that's where Isaac and Abraham lived for a considerable time. They lived there at least until Isaac was married, whatever length of time that was after Sarah's passing. Joseph went to Hebron, to Kirjath Arba, to find his brothers. His father said, go there and you'll find them. And of course, when he was there, he wandered around and the Spirit of God led him to where he would find his brethren in Dothan. And that's where, of course, he was sold into slavery. It was in Hebron, it was Hebron that Caleb received. Remember, when the children of Israel, this is Abraham's grandson, Jacob, who became Israel, they left this area, they went down into Egypt, and then they returned into the promised land. And what place did God give Caleb? God gave Caleb Hebron. This is where Othniel fought for Caleb and won his bride Aksa. And Aksa prayed, you know, Father, give me a well, and so on. So it's a very important place. It's 20 miles south of Jerusalem. An important place in history. The place where people met with God. Sarah met with God in Hebron. Because Sarah departed from this world and saw her God here. What a scene it was for the angelic host, seeing this place of Hebron, a soul departing and coming into the assembly of the saints above. A well-marked place in the Bible, and for good reason. Now look at verse 3 with me. I cannot emphasize sufficiently how much Abraham would have mourned and wept, okay? That this would have been intense. Even today, you can see in Jewish culture the intensity of mourning. There is a culture of wailing when someone dies. And you know, it is right and proper to mourn when someone dies. We ought to give people their due respect. That's what Abraham does here. He's respecting his wife. He didn't just feel all sorry for himself and let her lie there and rot. No. He respectfully mourned for her. But look at verse 3. He wasn't overcome by it. He didn't live mourning for the rest of his life. And I say this to emphasize the point that mourning is proper, but it shouldn't overcome as you want it to end. Look at verse 3. And Abraham stood up. Now read the whole thing together. The end of verse 2. It says, and Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And Abraham stood up. The idea there is of moving on. The mourning ceased. I'm sure he still felt awful. The relationship was still ended. There's still the change. He's not going to see his wife again. Obviously, a button isn't flipped and all of a sudden it's fine. But there is a going on. He takes courage and he stood up from before his dead. Couldn't be more emphatic. He stood up before his dead and spake on the sons of Heth. He's getting on with his duties. He's going to honor his wife and he's going to prepare the funeral service. That's what you have here. I mean, death in these days was not like today. You buy your grave, you have the papers there, you have all the arrangements laid out, you call the undertaker, and the undertaker takes care of it all. No. When someone died, when Sarah died, 100% of the responsibility fell on Abraham. He had to deal with every detail. Every detail. And look what he does. He begins by purchasing a burial ground. Now you might say, why was Abraham, with all his wisdom, he knew, listen, his wife was 127. Did they think they were going to live forever? Did he not have something in place? Did he not expect to die? Well, the Lord had said to Abraham that he wouldn't own any ground. God wouldn't give him any ground in the promised land. So Abraham never settled anywhere. He never purchased anywhere. But now there comes a point when he needs to find a burial ground. He has to go and purchase ground for the respect of his wife. And God takes great care. Have you noticed how much detail there was? And I mentioned it when we're reading it. Look how much detail God recorded of this transaction. He's just buying a grave. And there's almost a whole chapter given to it. To buy a grave. Because it is right to respectfully honour the dead. And to have our affairs in order. And Abraham went to great length to do this decently and in order. You see, we read here that he stood up before the sons of Heth and he asked them for a burying ground. All right? Let me see. Yeah, verse 4. He said, I am a stranger and a sojourner with you. Give me a possession of a burying ground with you that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And the children of Heth answered Abraham, saying unto him, Hear us, my Lord, thou art a mighty prince. And just stop there for a wee minute, because I want you to notice this. Abraham said, I'm a stranger. A sojourner in verse 4. What that means is, I'm a blow-in. We often say that about people here in Larne. Nearly everybody's a blow-in. Myself included. He's a blow-in. Just a sojourner. He's here. But look at how his testimony had so grown in this area, verse 6, where they, in verse 6, they don't call him a stranger, they don't call him a sojourner, they call him a mighty prince. Look at his testimony here. Here's a man who is remarkable and well-favoured amongst even the pagan, the ungodly. He wasn't out to make an enemy. He wasn't out deliberately to be a thorn in people's side. He was a man who was well-respected in the community. Listen, that doesn't mean you have to compromise your morals and your stand. We ought to be righteous. We ought to be strong in the faith. Other people ought to see us the same way Abraham was viewed here. There's a mighty man. I don't agree with everything. These people didn't agree with Abraham's God. They didn't agree with Abraham's worship. They would certainly not have agreed with Abraham's morals. But they respected him as a man. And we ought to be above reproach, as Abraham and Sarah was in this area. But anyway, he says in verse 4, Give me a possession of a burying place with you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. See that phrase at the very end there? Out of my sight. Bury my dead out of my sight. Sometimes we use that phrase. When there's someone, we find them very hard to tolerate, we might say, I'll be glad to see them out of my sight. Glad to see them well gone. Glad to see the back of them. That's the same word here. Same phrase rather. Bury my dead out of my sight. Now think about that for a moment. Sarah, even in her old age, was greatly sought after. She was sought after by pharaohs, by kings, by many a man. She was clearly a very remarkably radiant woman. Because as soon as they walked into Egypt, they were after her. I mean, she was highly sought after. So a woman of remarkable beauty. But she's now repulsive in Abraham's sight. With all the beauty that she had in life, now that she's dead, he's no desire to look at her. Get rid of her. He's not saying that disrespectfully. But remember, this wouldn't have happened in a very short space of time. She would have died. I'm sure it would have taken some time to confirm her death. She may have lay there for a day, two, three, whatever. It was a mourning period. And only after all that does Abraham begin the transaction of buying a grave. She had been rotting before him. She had been corrupt. Men and women, we ought not to give obscene amount of attention to our physical appearance that one day will rot and die and will be hideous and corrupt. We ought to give proper attention to our soul that lives forever. Sarah was now with the Lord. I think it's interesting here how Abraham talks about Sarah. He doesn't say, I want to bury Sarah. Again, at funerals, we use people's names because what we're trying to deal with as tenderly as possible, and rightly so. But Abraham has the right to do this, and he doesn't call her Sarah anymore because Sarah's gone. He just calls her my dead, my corpse. This is mine, it's my responsibility, she's my wife. It's not that he owned her because he bought her anything. It's his responsibility that they were one, but she's just a body now. And he says, take it, let me bury it. Give me a burying place that I may bury my dead out of my sight. He was a mighty prince who had a mighty queen. Now she's gone. Read on with me here. As this transaction progresses, look at verse 6. Hear us, my Lord. Thou art a mighty prince among us. In the choice of our sepulchres, bury thy dead. None of us shall withhold from thee his sepulchre, but that thou mayest bury thy dead. So these people are ready to grant him his wish. And what they're saying is, listen, you pick your spot. You pick your grave. You pick your tomb. Some of these men spent exceptional amounts of time going to a hillside and carving it out with tools. I'm not too sure what the technology would have been like in this age, okay? We're not here in the age of tractors and drills and all the rest of it. No, some would have carved out by hand. So it's a big sacrifice. And what they're saying is, take a tomb, take a sepulchre, pick it. You're a mighty man, we'll give it to you. Look at verse 7. Look at how Abraham responds. Here's a man of great decency. A man of great respect. Verse 7. And Abraham stood up. Remember, he's what, 100 and... I'm not sure what he is. Wasn't he 10 years? Yeah, 10 years old. So he's 137. And Abraham stood up. And know this. He stood up as a mark of respect. And it wouldn't have been easy for him to stand up. You see in the next chapter. Look at the next chapter. Chapter 24. He's bedbound. Chapter 24, and Abraham was old and well stricken in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said unto his eldest servant of his house that ruled over all the land, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh. Not a particularly pleasant task here, but he's lying in his bed, unable to get up. That's the idea. And he's going to make this man enter into an oath, and he did so by asking, they put his hand under his thigh. I can't explain all that right now, but for him to stand up was a big deal. He's hardly fit for it. So go back then to verse 7 of our text, chapter 23. And Abraham stood up and bowed down. He's wanting to show decency and respect here. And Abraham stood up and bowed down, bowed himself to the people of the land, even to the children of Heth, and he communed with them. And what he essentially says to them, go to Ephron. He's got a cave in Machpelah. Let me have that. Ephron, again, equally decently says to him, listen, don't worry about it. Just take it. Just take the field. Just take the graveyard. What's intriguing here is what Ephron says. Verse 14. Abraham's insisted on paying. Verse 14. And Ephron answered Abraham, saying unto him, my Lord, hearken unto me. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver. What is that betwixt me and thee? That's a great lesson for the people of God, you know. For any of us. Money shouldn't come between our relationships. 400 shekels, that was a decent amount of money. You're not talking here about spare change. 400 shekels was significant. But he says, why should money come between me and you? And they're not even relatives. They're not even brothers in Christ. But he's enough wit to know that money shouldn't come between human beings. Or relationships will pass away. Money's worthless. Relationships are far more important. I understand that money's necessary. I understand that. But it shouldn't come between us. It shouldn't come between us. Now, just as we come to a close here, move down to verse 20 with me. So Abraham weighed out the money for the grave, for the sepulchre, and It became his possession. He purchased the cave, the trees, the field, everything in verse 17. It's just it's a transaction. Read verse 17, actually. And the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field and the cave, so the field and the cave which was therein, and all the trees that were in the field that were in all the borders round about were made sure. So you can see a solid, a legal transaction here. These things were made sure. They were sealed to be Abraham's now. So no one could ever contest. No one could ever come back and say, listen, that field's mine. It was Abraham's permanently. He would be buried there later on. And in time to come, this would be known as the burial ground. But anyway, look with me at verse 19. And after this, after he'd mourned and grieved, and after he'd purchased a burial ground, I'm sure the purchasing process didn't take long. I'm sure it was a matter of hours. I'm sure it was. Maybe a day, whatever. Verse 19. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. And the field and the cave that is therein were made sure unto Abraham for possession of a burying place for the sons of Heth. And just look at that word there, a burying place. Can I say, although Abraham and Sarah were very wealthy and they were prospered, they didn't own anything. There was not a square foot on planet Earth that they owned. None. And there are plenty of individuals who walk in this life and we own very little. We're never rich, never wealthy. But there is one thing that everyone will own. One place where they will be and it will be theirs. It's their burying place. Place where you lie. Some people will be cremated. Some people will die at sea. Some people will pass with natural causes, but will all, or atoms or dust will be somewhere. Will rest somewhere. And will be in the ground, permanently there, until resurrection. Because Abraham here found a burying place for his wife. But that's not the end of the story. It's the end of the chapter. Because it hasn't changed. Sarah's still there. She's still there. Her body's still there, I should say. But would you go with me for a moment to the New Testament? Turn with me to 1 Thessalonians, please. 1 Thessalonians, chapter 4. In the verse 13. But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren. There's lots of things we're ignorant about. We shouldn't be ignorant about this. But I would, this is 1 Thessalonians 4:13. But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that ye sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. You see, move on down here. Look, read the whole portion. You can go and read yourself if you want. But look with me at the end of verse 13 there. It says, even as others which have no hope. We shouldn't sorrow as those that have no hope, because we do have hope. And I think that's key to Abraham's strength here. Yes, he mourned and he wept over his wife, and then he stood up, because he knew, listen, Sarah's gone. It's absent from the body, and it's present with the Lord. She knows, he knows that she was with her God. Someone prayed in the prayer meeting beforehand there. Sometimes people talk about God. Sarah talked about God. But Abraham knew. Now she's talking with the Lord. She's talking with the Lord. Go on down then to verse 18. That same portion, 1 Thessalonians. Verse 18. Wherefore comfort one another with these words. There's comfort here. There's comfort. It's not the end. It's just a resting place. Until the great day of the resurrection. When the Lord comes to bring his loved ones home. Alexander the great warrior, the great triumphant general, he one time had a person who died. I assume it was a significant person. Well, it was actually. It was his father, actually. Alexander the Great's father died. And after he had died, there was, I suppose, a kind of autopsy of sorts. And they were examining his father's dead body. And Alexander the Great is said to have went into the examiner, and he watched him with great detail examine his lifeless father. And he said to the man, "What are you looking for? What is it you're looking for?" And the man, with great solemnity, turned round and said, "I'm looking for the thing that I cannot find." Alexander was baffled by that. "Is that a riddle? I'm looking for the thing that I cannot find." And the man went on to say, "It's this, the difference between your father's bones and the bones of all his slaves." From his perspective, as a man who examined dead bodies, they're all just the same. No matter how rich, how powerful, no matter your power in this world, when you die, we're all the same. Whether you're a Sarah, an Abraham, whether you're a Pharaoh or a David Brown or whatever, it's a body of dust. Let me give you one more story here. I thought it was appropriate. There was a Christian railroad engineer. He was a man, and his mother and father were saved. And one day he was going down the track, and he had an engineer accompanying him. And the engineer was talking, and he said to his colleague, "You know, I used to come down this track every day and look up on the hill, because near the end of the track, up on the hill, was where his mother and father lived. And I said, every night, once the run was done, I would bring the train down the track, and my mother and father would be there. They always stood outside the door. Always stood outside the door." There's a woman in Ballyclare Church, actually, lived in a house outside a railroad, and she would say the same thing. They always would have been out to see the train. Now, she was directing and so on, had to be there. But same idea. They watched out to see their son going by, and they said to each other, whenever he went by in his train, "Thank the Lord, Benny is home safe again. He's home safe." But instead, I looked up now and the house is empty, for they're gone. They're no longer there. But he says, "I'm not sad, because someday I'm going to go to heaven. I think my parents will say the same thing. Benny, it's home safe at last." Because he was going home to heaven as well. I trust today, like Sarah, Abraham, like this train driver, no matter your prestige and your position in life, I hope you're going to go home. I hope we'll be able to say to you, I hope if I'm there before you, I'll be able to say in heaven, "Welcome, I'm glad to see you." Not in the house of God, but in heaven. Let's be prepared for the one thing that's certain, that's our death. Please take your hymn books tonight. 269.